Stu Muir is a Waikato farmer who believes strongly in local individuals and the communities taking responsibility for the environment around them.
I decided to do my own regeneration in my own backyard. Now, Gandhi said four phases to starting a pioneering movement. First, they ignore you. It's fine with that, I'm a farmer. I just want to get stuck in and get the job done with no undue attention. Secondly, they laugh at you. By the time they realise that I'm laughing at them, laughing at me, we get to the third phase. That's where they want to fight you. Now, everything in the animal kingdom knows not to provoke or antagonise a brightly coloured object. A red-headed farmer in the middle of the swamp with a chainsaw is by no means an exception. Then after that, they want to join you. And that's where you get the ripple effect.
Stu Muir there talking in 2020 about his regeneration project, and I think he's outed himself as having a fine crop of red hair there. He's a fifth-generation farmer who farms at Aka Aka, southwest of Pukekohe. The Papa and Mangati streams flow through his property and they've become stagnant. They had become stagnant and blocked with invasive willow trees and from sediment that had flowed through from the Waikato River. He cleared the weedy species, brought in pest control and let the streams, which run from the Waikato River, flow once again. And he's used the project to inspire others, especially rangatahi, to learn about what can be done by local people and communities if they get stuck in. Today, a variety of native fish and bird species have returned to the area. Stu is proud of his te reo. He says he's at conversational level and he uses it in talks he gives on conservation. He's an Environmental Hero of the Year award winner in the New Zealanders Awards. They're being announced on Wednesday evening. Kia ora, Stu. Welcome to 9 to Noon.
Kia ora, Catherine. Kia ora.
When did you realise something had to be done with the Mangati and Papa streams on your property?
Pretty much I was aware of it all of our life because my grandparents, we used to spend a lot of time down there white baiting and duck shooting and all of those things you do in the country. And they used to talk about what it had been like when they were kids and then combine that with the other kaumātua that were born and bred there. You sort of got a sense that things were going downhill, especially with our whitebait and our mataku and various species. And it had come to a state where there was no current left in it. There was areas that we'd kept open just physically with a chainsaw and that kind of thing. But the vast majority of it had become blocked.
So where did you start?
Well, we used to just, even as teenagers and that, just start with a chainsaw and get in and open up our little areas. But the biggest change came in 2011 when the Waikato River Authority was formed. And we were one of the first, I think, private people that they funded. And we did a little 1 hectare island at the back of the farm as a test to see or to prove our methodology. And yeah, that's where we started. And then from there, then we got majorly into it and opened up kilometres of that stream. And even an island, we took a barge and a 12-ton digger, floated that down the Waikato River and opened up a big island down there and did the same sort of thing.
What does opening up require? Because obviously you're clearing what's there, but things tend to grow back, Stu. So what's been the sort of strategy used?
Well, initially it was pretty ugly. So we sprayed out all of the willows that were blocking the stream. And it was literally me with a chainsaw and a mate with a digger and about 50 or 60 metres of chain. And I'd just chainsaw it up, tie it round, he'd pull it up and put it into piles on the bank. And then the most important part was really the next 1 or 2 years. We sort of tried to keep the weeds at bay. And then when we planted really, really heavily, more so than what we'd sort of done in the past. And that, after about 4 or 5 years, or probably even less than that, it shades out those weeds. And with the stream itself, once we'd taken out all those blockages, it was away. Like, the current was unbelievable. I mean, I was down there yesterday, and you can barely paddle against it now.
So the stream does its own kind of pest control.
Yeah, once you bring that current back to the river, well, you know, the life just starts again. But the other really important thing was pest control. So we've got like 2,000 bait stations all over the river, plus dock 200s. And that's made a major impact in terms of the regeneration of the indigenous plants, the native plants down there. Hitherto, they just never got a chance. The seeds would be eaten by rats. And if something did actually germinate, then the possum would come along to eat it. So you really notice now on those islands down the river where we've been doing it a massive difference.
So what are the natives that are growing there now, the native species that are there now and flourishing?
Oh, well, everything that used to be here in the first place, you know, your kahikatea, karamu, kōwhai, hanga, manuka, putaputa weta, hauhere, everything. You know, like if you observe nature and see what it is like in the first place, all you have to do is replicate that system, and away it goes.
And it's brought bird life, bird species back too.
Hell yeah. Like we never had kereru or tui here. You know, it was quite a big thing if one would turn up. Now they're common as, you know, they've increased in numbers 9 to 10-fold.
What's your family's history in the area?
Ha. Yeah. Well, I think we got kicked out of Scotland in the late 18 early 1840s and came over here about 1842. And then by the 1850s, old Sandy and his brothers were riding through the Waikato from Auckland across to the East Cape somewhere, possibly around Opotiki, maybe further, and buying cattle and bringing them back. And that was only, you know, due in part because they had very good relationships with all of those different iwi, but especially under the Kuruwai of Tainui, Ngāti Tiata, Ngāti Tupa. So they've been, yeah, been in this area since the 1850s, really. And this particular farm was actually a punishment for my great grandfather. His father got sick of him doing what he was doing, so bought this land down here in the middle of a swamp and said, "Mahi to mahi, boy, go and do some hard work and get going." Yeah.
Does this explain your embrace of te reo, your close relationships with iwi?
Yeah, absolutely. Like all of the muirs were fluent in te reo up until that generation where it was sort of beaten out of them at school. My father used to speak pidgin, funnily enough, with the neighbours. So next to the here te whānau, we've sort of been living next to them for 6 generations. And with Ngāti Tipa and Ngāti Tata, you know, obviously we've been very close throughout all of those generations and really quite proud of that relationship. Even during the land wars, you know, we didn't want to have any part of it. And yeah, and it, you know, when you, how would we put it? If you've spent 180 years next to somebody and you, the transfer of knowledge has only been one way, it would be rather sad. So having all of that sort of reo and tikanga around as a kid, naturally, you know, you sort of get interested in it, and the stories that get passed down from both Māori and Pākehā, you know, and I loved history and that sort of thing, so I spent a lot of time around those elders, and just learned from them, really.
In your kōrero at the talk in 2020, we played a cut from it earlier. You alluded to the resistance, and this is natural to any kind of change in any community, and in farming, it certainly happens. What's been your experience of all of this with respect to farmers getting interested in what you're doing, and then picking up a lot of what you're doing and perhaps applying it? What's been the journey?
Well, I think for most people, you know, both urban and rural, you know, they're sort of overwhelmed by the magnitude of what's happening and what's going to happen. And I think when people looked at what I was trying to do down there, you know, they just thought I was nuts. They thought it was impossible. So I think in that way, it's show people what is possible, if you're willing to do it. Same with the pest control, you know, people think, what the hell are you doing? But all of a sudden they go into the batches and there's no rats, you know, there's no possums keeping them awake at night. And it wasn't long before people wanted to join it. So now I just supply bait to all the people because everyone down here knows what part of the river belongs to who. So you just said, oh, you know, you're that family. Okay, well, you look after that island and so on and so forth. So that's how it works. On a national level, through the Dairy Environmental Leaders Forum, we get to share all of these stories and get to understand that I'm just one part of a huge movement that's happening up and down the country. So it's largely positive that last tier, I don't know what will be done with them because, like most people in society, once they've got a certain set of values or views, it's very hard to change. And that's where the education, if you can get to those kids, and the kids go home and start to educate the parents, or if they've got a close relationship with their grandparents, so you get it from the sort of kuia side and then from the moko side, that actually is where a big shift in the dial, I think, comes because it's that sort of middle group often that is a little bit stuck, perhaps.
Stu, congratulations on all that's been achieved there, and also on your nomination for the Environmental Hero of the Year award. Good luck for Wednesday night.
Thank you very much, and thank you for the time. And no, I'm really looking forward to it, and can't wait to see Graham or Fiona take it out, because Graham Atkins is just awesome what he's done. Love him.
Is he a neighbour?
No, he's the other nominee. I thought it was a scam when it first came. I deleted it.
Where's Graham
Yeah.
doing his work?
So he's East Coast, the Maungapae Raukumara project, and we funded him through the Endangered Species Foundation with Ngutukaka. That's how I first got to know him, but his work is landscape change, and he's just an amazing rangatira.
Ngā mihi nui, have a great time on Wednesday. Thanks very much. That is Stuart Muir. He's up for the Environmental Hero of the Year Award at the New Zealander Awards, which are being announced on Wednesday evening. He farms at Aka Aka southwest of Pukekohe.